This is Jock Talk, an intimate, in-depth discussion with the best jockeys in thoroughbred racing. Presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
25-year-old Mario Gutierrez, who touched Derby, 1:38.
Digging down for the final 16th under Victor Espinosa.
Joe Calamo in the ride of his life, in the race of his life.
Gary Stevens, 3 Preaknesses.
A brilliant ride by Calvin Burrell.
Up the inside under Johnny Velasquez to take it.
Shanghai Bobby and Rosina Pravnik come again to beat. He's had enough.
Raji Barrage aboard, crushing the field here.
Perfectly ridden by Javier Castellano.
A scintillating performance under Rafael Bejarano.
Now here's Mike Penna and Christina McManigal.
Hello again, HRRN Nation. It is time for some Jock Talk here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, all presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, reunited with my usual entry mate on the show, retired jockey Christina McManigal. We are in our Lexington, Kentucky studios, and welcome everyone joining us throughout North America on Sirius 220 XM Channel 206, and all of you tuning in on our website, on your smartphone or your tablet with our live streaming at horseracingradio.net. Christina, good to have you back.
Good to have you back, Mike.
Yeah, we kind of tag-teamed it the last couple of weeks, didn't we?
We did.
I was flying solo 2 weeks ago. Last week, you had a chance to host the show, first time. I thought you did a very nice job talking with Rosemary Hohmeister.
Thank you.
That was a lot of fun.
You did very well yourself, Mike.
Oh, gee, thanks.
Yes.
I appreciate that. Yeah, well, you know, this show is always so much fun because we get a chance to hear from so many of the top jockeys around the country, and each one has such a different story. But it's not just about the jockeys we're visiting with on a particular week. You remember a few weeks back, we had a chance to catch up with jockey Sheldon Russell. Mm-hmm. And Sheldon was just shy of that 1,000 win milestone. He was closing in, and he talked about that and what it was like and how much it kind of weighed on his mind getting close to that number. Well, this past Saturday, that wait was over because he finally got there. He won his 1,000th career race, and there's a nice guy, somebody who's a great ambassador for the sport, and can't praise Sheldon Russell enough for that performance.
It was fantastic, and finally got the monkey off his back there, and with all the cancellations out east, sure, for him it was very frustrating, and he finally got it done.
Yeah, finally got it done. Congratulations, Sheldon Russell. And if you want to hear his whole story, you can go back to our website, horseracingradio.net, a podcast of his Jock Talk show and all of our Jock Talk programs available on our site each and every week. Don't forget, this show also benefits the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund, and you should as well. You can go to pdjf.org to learn more about supporting those riders who have given this sport so much and are no longer able to compete. Go to pdjf.org to learn more, and we are happy to give back to PDJF through the sponsorship of this show. And boy, you can't find a better cause than the PDJF.
No, you really can't. And I'm fortunate enough to walk away from a career as a jockey, and so many of previous riders in the past aren't. And so any little bit you can do, we can do to help is greatly appreciated.
Well, let's get to our special guest for this hour. 25-year-old jockey Joe Calamo burst onto the national scene as the Eclipse Award-winning apprentice rider of 2007. Born and raised in Marrero, Louisiana, Joe has added his name to a long list of top jockeys to hail from the Bayou State, and that list includes names like Eddie Delahousse, Kent DeSormo, Randy Romero, Calvin Burrell, Robbie Alvarado, Shane Sellers, and so many others. To date, Joe Calamo has won 1,531 career races. His runners have earned more than $77 million in purses. And he is with us now on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. Joe, really appreciate you taking the time, my friend.
Oh, my pleasure. How you guys doing?
We're doing great and better now that we get to hear from the Joe Calamo.
Oh, well, I appreciate you having me on.
I guess you're taking a little break from the golf course to be with us today, right?
Just a little. I've been playing so bad, and I might as well. That driver's killing me.
Yeah, you need to get to the range. Work on that a little bit.
Oh, unbelievable. I won't be on the PGA Tour anytime soon. I know that.
Maybe you can get Corey Nakatani to give you some lessons.
Yeah, yeah. He gives me lessons after he takes my money. I know that.
Yeah, that's right. He might not want to teach you because then you might get too good and start taking his money.
No.
He's really good, isn't he?
He's a scratch golfer. He's a very good golfer. Very competitive too. A lot of trash talking goes on when we're out there.
Well, you know, I had mentioned, Joe, some of those names that have come out of Louisiana, and you are right there with some of the big names, and I know that you have so much more ahead in your career, but you heard me mention names like Eddie Delahousse and Kent DeSormo and Randy Romero and Calvin. Did you have a specific jockey that you looked up to when you were a kid growing up in Louisiana?
You know what? I grew up idolizing all of those guys. I mean, just to know where they came from and how they started. Really, Robbie Alvarado. I remember at the fairgrounds. I grew up going there since I was 7, 8 years old. And I mean, I idolized him just because I saw him all the time. He was leading rider every year. And Eddie Delahousse, I was a huge fan of. And fortunately, I was able to meet him when I first got out here to California, him and his wife Anita, and they've been great friends since. And they I think they moved back to Louisiana. They're building a house in Lafayette right now. So they actually moved back home, and they come out and visit back to Santa Anita once every couple months.
Joe, great to have you on the show. You rode and you won your first race ever at a Louisiana bush track, which those places kind of have a reputation for being very tough, but also, as Mike mentioned, so many greats came up that way. And so tell us about that experience and how long before you started riding at Louisiana Downs.
Yeah, I can remember like yesterday. That was it was me, my dad, and Zeke Zerang, who owned a private training center that I started riding at. We trailed a horse there to go run, and it was, I tell you what, when I just rode in that race, it felt like I made it. You know what I mean? I wore jock pants that somebody gave me. I think I had an old pair of jockey boots, and I thought that was the greatest feeling ever. And I think I won about 4 or 5 races there. I rode about 10 or 12 races at the bush track, and then I started riding after that. But I thought that was the greatest feeling in the world until I started riding real races.
When did you realize, Joe, that being a jockey was all you ever wanted to do?
Really, at a real early age, I want to say I was about 7 or 8 when my dad first took me out to the fairgrounds. And, I grew up riding horses with a Western saddle, not really with the jockey saddle like what you see today. But I just always loved being around horses. And I can remember when my dad brought me out and I went to the rail and watched that first race going around the first turn. And, I mean, it just I got the bug right there. You know, it was real exhilarating just watching it. You know, and I just thought to myself, man, I couldn't imagine being on there, what that would feel like. And really, from that point on, that's really all I worked toward at a young age. I started galloping horses when I was about 11 or 12 on a farm for Zeke's Ring. And really, every day after school, I would go there. Gallop horses, clean stalls, and just work on the weekends. I would go out with my dad to the fairgrounds and work for Connie's sister. Where the same thing, I would groom horses, walk horses, and really, really just kind of work my way from the bottom up.
Yeah, because your dad was involved too, wasn't he?
He was. He in the early 70s, late 70s, he trained a few horses, and then he was an assistant trainer for about 20 years to Connie Tisistra. And like I said, I would go out on weekends with him early in the morning, and then the best was Christmas vacation for 2 weeks. I would go out every single morning with him. That was the greatest.
Now, Joe, your mother, from what I hear, wanted you to grow up and be a doctor or a lawyer or something of that sort. Tell us about that.
Yeah, she definitely didn't want me doing this, but they sent me to private Catholic school my whole life, and I mean, obviously they thought I would have went to college and lived the American dream the right way, be a doctor or some sort of businessman. But And I, you know what, I was just so fortunate to have great parents that supported me. When they knew what I wanted to do and be a jockey, they supported me. They never did try and talk me out of it or anything. And I mean, really, if it wasn't for them being so supportive, there's no way I'd be here.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that, Joe. What does your mom think now when she watches you ride? Is she okay with it?
Yeah, it's funny. The first year, she was so nervous because I think I only rode 10 horses at the time when I was an apprentice when I first started, and a horse stumbled out the gate and I busted my lip up real bad because I was still wearing braces. I was only 16, so she got a little worried after that. I ended up getting the braces taken off, but for a while she couldn't even watch me when the race first started breaking out the gate. She was so worried, but now she's pretty good.
Didn't you tell me a story once about a Superman shirt that you used to wear all the time?
When I was it might have been Superman underwear.
That's what it was. I was trying to keep it clean, but all right, go with the Superman underwear.
No, that was it. That was it. And I had a whip that Robbie Alvarado gave me when I was young. And man, every race I would watch on the couch, I would bust that couch off. So I ended up having to buy my mom a new couch when I started riding. So that it was worth it though.
So you grow up, you're idolizing Robbie Alvarado, and then when you finally get to the big stage and you're riding at the fairgrounds, and I can remember that year because it was 2006, 2007, and it was the first time I had the chance to meet you. And we were there to broadcast our first Louisiana Derby on the network, which was 2007, the year that Circular Quay won it. And you were leading rider that year, and you were leading rider ahead of Robbie Alvarado. And that had to be just an amazing experience for you.
It really was. And really all of them guys down there. I mean, that's still like a big family. You know, Robbie, Corey, all of them guys. And you know what? I learned so much because they never quit teaching me. You know what I mean? Even when I was doing real well, they would tell me, you know, even when I would win a race, they could say, oh, you could do this a little better or do this differently. And I mean, that really helped so much, and that was a great feeling. Really, just riding at the fairgrounds was just tremendous. Because I mean, obviously, growing up there, and you know, all my family would go out all the time, friends. You know, I finished the 10th grade and then go to 11th grade, and it was so cool because on weekends, a lot of my classmates and good friends would come out and watch me. So it was just so cool just to be able to ride there. At a young age, and really that was my whole dream, just to be able to ride there. And when I was leading rider, I thought that was as good as it gets.
It's such an interesting dynamic too, and we hear that a lot from different riders that come on the program, where the veteran riders will help the younger riders, even though they're competing against each other for that leading rider title. That's just amazing. When you think about other sports, people are competing for a certain position. They don't want to help anybody out, but with racing, it's a little bit different, isn't it?
Yeah, and you know, that's what makes our game so unique. I mean, you look at, you know, any rivalry in sports, you know, Boston Red Sox and New York Yankees, you'll never see a Yankee telling another Boston guy how to do something right or wrong, you know, and it's just, that's what makes it so great. I mean, we do get very competitive, obviously. We all want to win, but at the same time, especially with younger riders, I think you want to make them look good and do good because their mistakes can sometimes cost you. If they get stopped in a spot and you're following them, then you're following them, and then you can't do well when something bad happens too, you know.
So Joe, you were a young rider, 16 with braces, and you actually dropped out of high school to ride races, and maybe not the you know, best advice to someone looking to get into the sport, but it obviously worked out well for you. And did you get much grief for that decision?
Well, I still don't know how, but I talked to my parents into letting me get homeschooled online. That was when I think online schooling was just starting to get big. And I remember finishing the 10th grade and I told them, you know, I just turned 16 and I said I could definitely get my license, go ride at Louisiana Downs and just see how it happens. And I told him, you know, let me ride for the summer. If I do well the first 2 months, you know, July and August before school started, then I could do the online thing. But if I didn't do good, I told him I would I would go back to school. Fortunately enough, I think I won 30 races at Louisiana Downs, and they let me do the online schooling, and then we went to the fairgrounds, and then I kind of got lost with the books, and then didn't pick them up after that, but it worked out pretty well.
Talking with jockey Joe Talamo on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Joe, when did you first realize you could be good at being a jockey?
When I started riding good horses, then I think that really makes us all look good. You know what I mean? But I'd say the last part of the fairgrounds, like in February, March, I was starting to ride a lot of horses for Bobby Frankel. He brought his string out there, and he brought some real nice horses. And man, everything he ran, I think he was winning at a 40% clip. Everything he ran would just run up the TV screen. And once I started riding good horses like that, I mean, it just builds your confidence up, and it makes you feel like you could ride with anyone, win any race, you know, and that really helped me out a lot confidence wise.
Well, Joe, you closed out that breakthrough year with actually riding 250 good horses, 250 wins, and you won the Eclipse Award for Outstanding Apprentice. And tell us about that year. Were you just taking it all in, or were you a bit overwhelmed? Did it just fly by? Tell us about that.
It flew by pretty quick. I look back now, it was really just a blur because everything happened so fast, between starting at Louisiana Downs. And it took me a while to win my first race. I think it took me about 25, 30 starts to win my first race. So, you know what I mean? It didn't come easy at all. But I could just remember every day waking up at, 4:35 in the morning and just working hard. I don't think I took a day off when I was an apprentice rider. And it just that's all I was concentrating on, just working hard and winning races. And looking back, I don't think I really got to enjoy it that much, because I was just so focused on winning. I would win. I think I won 5 races in one day twice at the fairgrounds, and I don't think I even realized it. I was just so worried about the next day and trying to do the same thing. But looking back, I mean, it was really incredible, to get those good opportunities that I was given and with Bobby Frankel, that really helped me out so much riding for him, because he actually took me out to California later on in April, and that's how I ended up staying here.
Joe, I'm always curious, when you see a young athlete in any sport have a tremendous amount of success the way you did when you first burst onto the scene, how are you able to stay grounded and not let all of that success go to your head?
Oh, it's a pretty humbling game. I learned that at an early age. And like we were talking about it earlier, us being so competitive. Like this weekend, for instance, I rode 10 horses on Saturday, didn't win a single race. Sunday I rode 7, was fortunate to win 2. So, I mean, you're looking at, if you lose, I know everyone's heard that, but, if you're winning at a 20% clip, which is unbelievable, you're losing at 80%, So I learned at a real early age to be a good winner and a great loser. That's just how the game is. But like I said, it's very, very humbling. You can have a great day one day, a bad day the next. So I try and stay even throughout, kind of have a happy medium. But there's no better feeling than winning a race. I know that.
Joe, you talked about confidence earlier, and obviously, as you just said, the game humbles you. But how do you stay confident? That's such a big part of winning races is how you feel, and the horse picks up on that. And tell us how you stay confident.
Yeah, absolutely. My mindset every day, I just try and be as positive as I can. I think preparation is a huge, huge part. In anything, but especially in our game, because it's not only your horse, but the competition as well. So I try and study the racing form for at least an hour or two, and I watch a lot of replays, not only my horse, but the other horses, just pick up on little things. If a horse is getting out or lugging in, you might be able to stay right behind him and get through on a rail or something. So it's little things like that, whether it makes me win one more race a year that I wasn't going, I feel like it makes a difference,
Joe, I have to tell you, I thought that at least in my book anyways, Joe Talama was the most famous person to come out of Marrero, Louisiana, which, by the way, only has a population of about 35,000, maybe even a little bit less than that, until I started doing some homework on it. And then I noticed names like Ryan Clark, who, of course, played for the Pittsburgh Steelers, Cordell Stewart, a former Steelers quarterback, Reggie Wayne, the great Indianapolis Colts receiver. And I'm thinking, well, maybe Joe Talamo is not quite as big of a star as I thought when it comes to Marrero.
I'm telling you, the water down there, it's pretty good.
Yeah, what is the secret? All these great athletes coming out of that small town in Louisiana.
The water and the crawfish, that's what it is. I didn't realize that Reggie Wayne's from Marrero. Wow.
Yeah, right outside of there, I guess, or pretty close. When I started doing some homework on it, it caught me by surprise as well. Have you had a chance to meet any of those individuals?
I have not. Hopefully one day that would be pretty nice.
I guess for you, it's still all about the New Orleans Saints, though, isn't it?
Oh, my Saints, baby. I hope we get them this year.
When did you get the nickname Smokin' Joe? Where'd that come from?
You know, I think it was Nick Hines, the Sarge, gave me that. He was on TVG all the time, and you know, at the fairgrounds, I was so fortunate. Women all the time, he just said, he just came up with it, Smokin' Joe, I think, from Smokin' Joe Frazier. And it stuck pretty good.
Joe Talamo joining us on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
So, Joe, you mentioned you started in Louisiana, of course, and then you went to California. It was by chance that you began riding for the late Bobby Frankel, who liked the way you rode and convinced you to go to California. And tell us about him and the legend and what it was like to ride for him.
Oh, he was incredible. He was just so sharp. You know, I know people know that, you know, he won a lot of big stake races, but he actually later on got to know that he started out in a claiming ring, so just claim horses, and, you know, they would step up from 20,000 to, you know, winning stake races. But he was just so sharp and paid attention to detail. I remember working horses for him at Hollywood Park, and, I mean, he had 50, 60, 70 horses, knew every single one. Knew if they jogged a little funny one day from the next, it just paid attention to detail so well. And he was tough to ride for. I mean, if you got in trouble or made a mistake, he would let you know. But he was just what a great horseman. And he really turned my career around as far as fate, because I know if I wouldn't have rode for him at the fairgrounds, I'd probably be riding the Kentucky Circuit or New York, because I was probably going to go to Keeneland right after the fairgrounds and then maybe try and go on to New York or Chicago or something like that. But he wanted me to, take a chance and come ride a couple races one weekend at Santa Anita. And I just completely fell in love with it.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that decision to go to California and why California. But it sounds like it was Bobby Frankel that really had the biggest influence on bringing you out there.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said earlier, he put me on so many winners at the fairgrounds, and he just asked me if I wanted to come out for a weekend at Santa Anita, and it worked out good. It was right after the fairgrounds was over with. And, God, I remember like yesterday, it was like in the 40s in New Orleans. Me and my dad flew up to Santa Anita. It was 85 in April, sunshine. I'm like, man, this is paradise. and I was fortunate enough that weekend, I think I won four or five races, but yeah, I mean, they were real live horses, a few from Bobby and a couple other guys. And actually I flew from there to New York because we had prior commitments to ride there, and it was snowing, sleet, 34 degrees. And I stayed there a week and I said, man, I got to go back to California. That weather was too good. So that changed the shape of my career, as far as that goes, because I've really been there since.
How difficult was it when Bobby passed away? That couldn't have been easy.
No, it was tough. And I can remember going to his funeral. There wasn't a dry face in there. He was loved by so many people, and helped so many people out. You know, I mean, there's so many guys that worked for him. His assistant, Umberto, I think, worked for him for 40 years. I mean, you don't see that anymore. And a lot of his exercise riders, grooms, they worked for him 20, 30 years, and you don't see that in this game anymore, you know, because, I mean, people
people travel around and they'll quit this guy, work for this guy. But he was loved by so many people. And like I said, just so sharp, very, very sharp.
Did you ever get homesick when you moved out there?
Oh, God, I did. You know what I missed a lot was obviously my family, friends. I missed the food. A lot of healthy eating out here. They don't have a lot of fried stuff like they do back home. But it was tough. But I was fortunate. My dad came out for a while, and then my family still fly out probably 3 or 4 times a year.
What's your favorite Cajun food?
Oh man, long leg. Probably crawfish. I love it because it's seasonal. I think it's only about 4 or 5 months out of the year. The crawfish and oh man, it's so many things. That oysters, grilled oysters on the half shell. Oh man.
No place to get good crawfish in California.
Not too many places have it. Not too many places.
You ever have them shipped in?
Yeah. Actually, on Pinta Zormo had a crawfish boil about 2 weeks ago. He ships them in. They'll ship a sack into you live, and you just go pick it up at the airport. So he definitely knows how to boil crawfish. I'll give him that.
Who's the best cook in the jocks room out there?
That's a tough one. Who would be? I don't know. They all use too much butter, so not too many of them.
What's your specialty? You must like to cook when you get a chance.
Yeah, I cook a lot. I love spaghetti and meatballs. I grew up eating that on Sundays with my mom. That takes a little too long, though. I use a crock pot a lot. I like that. I'll make some prime ribs in there. What else? Filet. I love barbecue and filet. Chicken and gravy. A few dishes. I'm not as good as my mom, though. I wish I could.
Joe, I hope you're fortunate enough with your weight you can eat all of that. And we're about ready to take a break, but can you eat whatever you like?
Yeah, I can. I'm so fortunate, but I definitely work at it. I work out 6-7 days a week. Really just to stay strong. Fortunately, ever since I was an apprentice, right, I could pretty much eat whatever I want. In moderation, I don't eat hamburgers every day, but I'm fortunate enough to, eat 3 meals a day. But lately, about the last month or so, I've been making a lot of protein shakes, and that's helped me a lot, especially on big days like Saturday when I rode 10. I'll have 2 or 3 of them during the day, and it just keeps me pretty strong throughout.
He's jockey Joe Talamo. We're going to continue this visit on Jock Talk presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka right after this. Stay with us here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Tito Beveridge, founder and master distiller of Tito's Handmade Vodka, America's original craft vodka. I believe in the craft process of distilling in batches using old-fashioned pot stills, and that's the way we still make Tito's Handmade Vodka today. We even won the World Spirits Competition, double gold, unanimous judge's choice. Tito's Handmade Vodka is made from 100% corn, so it's naturally gluten-free. For recipes, videos, and more, visit titosvodka.com. 80 proof Tito's Handmade Vodka, 5th Generation Inc., distilled and bottled in Austin, Texas.
Since 2006, the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund has provided critical financial assistance to some 60 riders who have sustained catastrophic on-track injuries. The lives of these former athletes who have given so much to the sport of horse racing have been changed forever. I'm Mike Penna, president of the Horse Racing Radio Network and proud supporter of the PDJF, and I ask you to join me in supporting this outstanding organization right now by texting the word jockey to 50555. You'll be credited with a $10 donation that can literally change the lives of those disabled riders who need it so much. It's quick, it's easy, and it's only $10. Who would think a simple $5 Xacta box would mean so much to so many? So let's all help make a huge difference in the lives of those riders who have given us so many great memories. Text the word jockey to 50555 today and visit pdjf.org to learn more. Message and data rates may apply. Terms mgive.org/chi.
Hey, I'm Chantel Sutherland Cruz and want to tell you all about BetAmerica.com. It's the coolest place to bet on horse racing on over 200 racetracks from America and around the world. New players receive a 100% bonus on your first deposit, up to $300. That's the best sign-up bonus available today. It's time to play the Bet America way.
The New York Thoroughbred Breeding and Development Fund means business for New York. Together with all equine pursuits in the Empire State, we pay more than $187 million in taxes and provide 33,000 jobs. We provide scholarships for young people who want to join the New York horse industry, and we encourage everyone to support all thoroughbreds all their lives. Visit nybreds.com to learn more about why the fund means business.
Celebrating 10 years of Eclipse award-winning coverage.
I'll have another. He comes here to Churchill Downs. He gets the victory here impressively.
Today, the Phipps and Janney families and their trainer, Shug McGahee, with Joel Rosario, all headed to the winner's circle.
California Chrome, California Bred, he wins on this afternoon.
Only the fourth time a Cal Bred has won the Kentucky Derby.
Thank you for making HRRN your home for a decade of memories.
This is Jockey Orlando Bocachica, and you are listening to the Hall Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka.
Wake up, home, and California Flag going away from them. California Flag opens up. Can he keep going now? Delta Score coming on. Gately Cannonball down the center of the track. Got to have her running late, but it's all California Flag. California Flag, Joe Talamo in the ride of his life, in the race of his life. California Flag has won it. The filly got to have her a huge second. Cannonball ran on for third, and Delta Storm a creditable fourth.
California Flag so brilliant in winning the 2009 Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint. That is the lone Breeders' Cup winner on the resume, and it is a stellar resume of jockey Joe Talamo. I know it had to mean an awful lot to him. We're going to ask him about that, but want to welcome everybody back to the program here on Sirius 220 XM Channel 206. Mike Pennock, Christina McManigal with you on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. Really enjoyed hearing about Joe Talamo the early days in the first half of the program, and now looking at some of those career highlights. And Joe, I can only imagine when you think back on California Flag and that Breeders' Cup win, that has to be a very special moment for you.
Oh, man, I can remember like yesterday. And I'll never forget when we crossed the dirt, I heard Trevor Dimmon saying California Flag opens up. I still get goosebumps because I knew right then and there that I didn't think anyone was going to catch him. He was a God, what a nice horse, and he absolutely loved that downhill turf course. He was just magnificent down there.
So you could hear Trevor's call during the race, or are you talking about in a replay afterwards?
No, during the actual race, and normally
wow.
I don't. I just remember hearing that, and oh man, I think the hair stood up on my arms, and I got pretty excited because I knew when he would switch leads, he would get that extra gear, and it was so hard for horses that were coming from way behind to catch him, because even though he would go so fast, he still had that late kick for that last 16th, 8th of a mile, and God, that was a fun day there.
Joe, do you prefer the turf or the dirt?
Wherever I have the best horse.
There you go.
But in turf races, I love a lot though, because I think it's easy to win a race if you're the third or fourth best horse, just from a trip perspective. Like going a flat mile. If the favorite's 3-4 wide both turns, it's so tough to win when you lose so much ground. So I mean, if you're saving ground. Unless the horse is so much the best, he wins. I win a lot of races that way, just from getting just a better trip.
You know, that win with California Flag really had to mean maybe even a little bit more to you, Joe, because earlier you talked about how this game can humble you very quickly, and you had that happen in 2009. You were on the doorstep of riding in your very first Kentucky Derby aboard I Want Revenge, who was going to be the favorite for that year's Derby. And then he gets scratched the day of the race. What do you remember about getting the news that he was going to be scratched?
Oh, it never did really sink into me, because I just, for one thing, I couldn't believe I was there in the first place. on a Derby favorite. And really, after his Will Memorial win, man, I didn't think there was a horse that could have beat him. He was just, for him to break slow, make up so much ground, and win going away was just amazing. So I was really in awe that I was there at such a young age with a good horse, and then for it to kind of spiral the other way and for him to scratch, I couldn't believe it. And at the time, you know, you're so young, I didn't know what to feel. You know, it was just it was very unfortunate, especially for everyone, for the owners, the trainer, Jeff Mullins. It was we were so high on him. He worked so good that week, and everything was good, and it was just real, real unfortunate.
Yeah, and you had some other interest there too, because I had read that you were going to donate, 25% of the earnings back to the Children's Hospital of New Orleans. So there, you were riding for a bigger cause as well, and that had to hurt a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely, because I've had a lot of family friends go through there that they've helped out so many people in New Orleans, especially, like I said, family friends and relatives. And it was hard for everyone, not only myself, like I said, whoever was affiliated with them, my family and friends who came out for it. It was just tough, you know.
Yet another example of the extreme highs and lows of the sport, Joe. But you did since ride in the Derby, so tell us your experience with Sydney's Candy.
Yeah, that was great. I remember, God, just walking up the paddock, and when you get onto the track and you look up at 100,000 people, it's just there's no better feeling. And once I felt that, I knew I wanted to feel it again and hopefully get back every year. It's just an amazing feeling. And especially when you walk into the gate, God, and you start hearing everybody scream before that last horse gets in, and just, God, what a feeling.
Yeah, I've had several jockeys and even trainers tell me that, Joe, that once they get there and they get a little taste of what the Derby is all about, they just can't wait to get back. Is that kind of what drives you a little bit too?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you grow up idolizing it, wanting to win it and be in it, but until you feel what it's like, it's better than what you think. It really is.
How were the nerves when you came out onto the track and they're playing My Old Kentucky Home? What was that like?
It was the worst part was really before the race, because after the Woodford, I think there's like an hour wait. So, man, there was a lot of nervous walks going around there, you know. But you know, it's funny. Once I got on and you warm up in the post parade, it's kind of like any other race. You know, you're warming up, feeling your horse out, and in my mind, I'm just kind of playing the race in my head how it's gonna pan out. So I mean, it's really just like another race, you know, until you get in the gate, and then once you're prepared and ready to go, then it's time, you know. But I was definitely, oh man, I had a lot of butterflies before that.
So given that Mike and I live here, how did you like Kentucky?
Oh, I love Kentucky. Absolutely love it. It's except for when it snows and sleet. It's pretty good. But no, the hospitality there is so nice. Louisville does such a good job that week, and for them to, I mean, it's tough really on any city when you have 100,000 people coming to one spot, but they do a heck of a job with it.
Yeah, Joe and I were texting back and forth a couple of weeks ago, and Joe was telling me how he was on the golf course, and I said, golf course? And we were sitting here freezing in Lexington at that time, and so I sent him a picture from my phone of what the temperature was. And Joe, I don't remember, maybe it was like 12 degrees or something. And you wrote back and said, way too cold for me.
It was chilly here that day. I think it was 74.
Yeah, you're killing me. Joe, tell me about going to Hong Kong when you got invited to compete in the Jockey Championship over there. What was that like?
That was great. Hong Kong was such a fun place. Me and my girlfriend Elizabeth ended up going, and we were there a week, and it was unbelievable. That's a fun city there. I ended up getting some suits and shirts made that I still have today. The fabric on it was just extraordinary. The restaurants were great, and the racetrack there is unbelievable. They only race 2 days a week, but I think at one track they had like 130,000 people there or something. It was just unbelievable. Everybody, I think that's the only form of gambling there. So everybody goes there. The pools are astronomical. I think it was, they might have gambled like 100 million U.S. in one day or something like that. Just unbelievable.
How long's that flight?
Oh, it was about 15, 16 hours, I think.
How do you deal with that? Like that? I get punchy flying from here to Florida. So how do you deal with that?
You know what? I love it. I sleep real good on planes. I think I took like a 7-8 hour nap, and then I watched I think I watched The Sopranos or something. They had just about every movie or on TV series you could watch. I think I was watching that the rest of the flight.
Well, speaking of TVs, you were a bit of a TV star for a short time there with the Animal Planet feature show that was called Jockeys. Tell me about being involved with that. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, that was fun, and it was, you know what, it was great for out here because I think a lot of people that didn't go to the races, it brought a lot of them out. So that's what satisfied me more than anything, just to try and get new people into the game, and it was fun. We had a good time doing it. The only thing I didn't like sometimes when we would go to, you know, restaurants and stuff like that, they wanted to film you, and for me after the races, I'll do any interview or TV camera, but when you're like in restaurants and stuff like that, sometimes it could get a little awkward. People walk up to you and say, "Oh, are you an actor?" I'm like, "No, I'm a jockey." but it was fun. We had a great time doing it. It was a good time.
Do you have a lot of people recognize you when you're out?
Not really. I mean, if it's people that go to the track and know horse racing every once in a while, but not too many. Sometimes they can't see me. I'm so short, so that's probably why.
Well, I guess in California, there are celebrities everywhere, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
You're also on Conan O'Brien, is that correct?
Yeah. That's probably the most nervous I've ever been for an interview. I'll never forget that we were in the green room, and Drew Barrymore was right next to me with her boyfriend or something at the time, and I'm like, man, you got to be kidding me. And I was fine before that. I had about 8 friends with me. We were hanging out, and I'll never forget when I walked up behind the stage and they said, okay, 10 seconds. I mean, I completely like washed out. I didn't think I was going to be able to talk, just knowing that, you know, there's so many people watching that. But it was cool. He was such a funny guy. That was a great time.
Jockey Joe Talamo joining us on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Joe, a couple of days ago, I think I actually retweeted it, Aaron Greider sent out a picture of you on Twitter and said that on Justin Bieber's 21st birthday, he was informed that you would be replacing him as the new Calvin Klein model. And the picture was you in the jocks room, blow-drying your hair. You had a button-down shirt that was wide open in the front. And I just wanted to ask you about that picture.
Well, I wish I could say I was going to be a Calvin Klein model, but no, that's not true. No, I was just fixing my hair, and it takes a while. I got kind of long hair, so it takes about 5-10 minutes, so he snuck a picture out on me, but I wish it was true.
Who's the biggest? We talked about, you know, some of the jockeys that are maybe the best cooks in the jock room, but who's the biggest prankster in the jocks room?
Oh, gosh. Probably me and Aaron, I'd say. Me and Aaron Greider. Lately, Iggy Puglisi brought a air horn in, and we'll sneak up behind somebody and blow it, and they jump. And then every now and then we'll get some firecrackers and light them off in there when somebody's taking a nap on the couch or something. We have a good time in there.
Is that the best prank you've ever played on anybody?
Probably the air horn. Oh, man, it jumps so hard. That's a funny thing.
How about the best prank you've ever had played on you?
Cool, man. I think I was taking a shower and somebody threw a rubber snake right by the drain, and I wasn't looking, and right when I took the soap out of my eyes and saw that, that was a pretty loud scream. Oh, man. But like we said earlier, we're very competitive, but we definitely have a good time there. But I mean, people don't realize we're with each other really more than we're with our families. You know, we get to the track, you know, 6, 7 in the morning or sometimes earlier, and you're there till 4 or 5 in the afternoon. I mean, that's a pretty long time to be with a bunch of guys, so might as well have a good time at it.
Well, it can be tough, too, because, again, you're competing with each other, but it's great that you guys, most of you, sounds like you all are so close and have fun, and so you mentioned you're with them most of the time, but you've also mentioned your girlfriend, Elizabeth Ellis, and tell us about her, and I believe, is she working with TV?
Yeah, she was actually a broadcaster for 2 or 3 years, and she just recently moved back to California. She was in South Dakota, and she did a tremendous job, had a lot of great job offers, and it was it got a little too cold there. It would get below freezing, snow a lot, and so she ended up moving back out here to be with her family and her younger sisters.
She's, of course, the daughter of trainer Ron Ellis, who you will ride for quite often, Joe. What's that like, riding for your girlfriend's father?
It used to be I would get pretty nervous, but Ron's a great trainer. He's really, really easygoing. Doesn't really tell you much, and he does a great job. And he enters pretty well. You know, when you're riding one for him, it's pretty live. So he just kind of legs you up, tells you good luck, and it's pretty easy going.
Did you ever have to come back after a race and you know that, man, I messed up this one big time, and now you have to face Ron Ellis after that?
Oh, the worst is going to dinner after. That would get pretty awkward. But absolutely. But I would sometimes pay for dinner that night. That would definitely help out.
That's awesome. Joe, tell us about Hollywood Park. You rode there, and obviously a sad day when the track closed. Tell us about what it was like to ride there.
Yeah, that was sad to see it close. It was fun. I had a lot of good memories there. The first two great ones I've ever won was at Hollywood Park. Won a lot of races there. It was such a big track. It was a mile and an eighth. The Bourne area was probably one of the best I've been in. They are very, very high ceilings, easy to get around. Just a real, real nice place. The thing I don't miss was the traffic. I can remember leaving at 5 in the morning, taking me a half hour to get there. And after the races, it would be an hour and a half, 2 hours going to downtown L.A. So that's one thing I don't miss was the traffic going there.
I don't know how anybody deals with the traffic in L.A. at all. I mean, as you know, Joe, I was out there this past weekend, and we broadcast the Big Cap. And every time I go, I think it's beautiful. I think the weather's great. I love Santa Anita. But that traffic, how do you deal with it?
It's amazing. And that's the thing. A lot of times, especially when you're going somewhere at night, you really have to work your schedule around the traffic. You know, so if you have a 7 o'clock dinner reservation, you're leaving your house at 6 o'clock sometimes, you know, you might go 20 miles, it'll take you an hour, hour and a half, but it's, that's why everybody's here, though. That weather's so good.
What is Joe Talamo like most about being a jockey?
Probably the highs of winning. I tell people all the time, whether it's an $8,000 claim or $1 million race, that just that feeling of winning and crossing the finish line first is just unbelievable. I really wish everybody could get that feeling, especially on multiple win days. There's some days you just feel like you can't do anything wrong, and there's no better feeling than that.
Joe, take us through a typical day.
Typical day, I'll probably wake up around 5:30, 6 o'clock, depending on how many horses I'll have to work out. Get to the track, work out a few horses. Then after that, I usually go to the gym around 10 in the morning. I'll go for about depending on how many horses I ride that day, I'll work out for about a half hour, an hour. Go to the track, ride. After the races, come home. Elizabeth might cook something, or we'll go out to dinner or something like that, and then do it over again. You know, that's a race day, a typical off day like today. Kind of get some errands done in the morning, go to the gym, same thing around 10 or 11 o'clock, then either play golf after or kind of hang out.
Talking with jockey Joe Talamo on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Joe, how about different goals that you might set for yourself moving forward? What things does Joe Talamo really want to accomplish? You're still very, very young. What things are still left?
For sure, winning the Kentucky Derby. I think not only my list, I think that's on everybody's list. But there's, like we talked about earlier, just getting there is and feeling that is just incredible. You know, and I really couldn't imagine winning that race. Like I said, just being there is so nice. But the feeling I get, you know, winning races and winning big races, I couldn't imagine how good that would feel to win that race. That's definitely one of my top goals would be to try and win that race. But it's so hard just to get to. I mean, if you think about it, there's so many jockeys, so many horses. There's only 20 of them that get in the gate every year. So really, to me, it's such a great honor just to be on a horse in that race, you know, because, I mean, in our sport, that's the best you can get, you know.
What's that process like, trying to find a Derby horse and hopefully the right Derby horse?
Oh, it's so tough, and that's why for guys like Mike Smith and that make it there every year, it's really incredible the job they do. I mean, really the guys that are sought after for that race time after time. I mean, they might have to choose between four and five horses sometimes. So it's really just making that right decision to try and get on the best horse for that race. And there's so many prep races from January, February, March till May, and really just picking through them. But you know, it's really for some guys, it's tough to even get one horse, much less picking through a few of them. But it's so tough, really, just with they're still young horses; they just turned three. And really, if they're real birthdays in March or April, they're really still 2-year-olds. So a lot of times they get hurt, they'll get sick, and it's so tough just to make it there.
Joe, did you ever think about if you had not found the racetrack, you weren't a jockey, what you would have done?
Saying paper or plastic, probably. I really don't know. I didn't really like school too much. So I don't know. I don't know how long I would have made it in college. And I'm too short, so I doubt I would have been playing basketball for Rick Pitino. So I don't know. I think about that too. What would happen? But I'm just just feel like I hit the lottery for everything to happen like it did. It's just incredible.
Yeah, it's been a meteoric rise for sure. I mean, you think back to being the first apprentice in history to win the jocks title at the fairgrounds back in 2007, and here we are talking only 8 years later. That's not a long time, Joe, and you've won more than 1,500 races. Can you ever imagine when you first sat on the horse that it would end up like this?
Oh, not at all. Not at all. I mean, obviously you have goals to try and do that and dreams, but it was just amazing, just really amazing. And like I said, for me, just riding at the fairgrounds was incredible because, like I said, growing up, it'd be like a kid watching football games at a stadium hoping to be a quarterback one day, you know. So I felt like when I started riding there, that my dreams were, I'm like, man, this is as good as it gets, you know. And then I've just been so fortunate and blessed to really just getting good opportunities, you know. And that's what, you know, when I left the fairgrounds, I really didn't know what to expect and where my career would go. But like I said, I was fortunate to get, you know, real good opportunities, and then it just kind of started escalating. But I thought the ride was going to end soon, but fortunately it kept going. So I'm just, like I said, just so fortunate and blessed for it.
What's the biggest change that you've noticed in yourself as a rider over the past several years?
Really a lot of things. I think I've gotten, especially from the time I first started, I feel like I've gotten a lot stronger because I think about that. It's funny, the first 2 or 3 years that I rode, I didn't work out at all. You know, I would work horses and ride, and I never, as far as a physical standpoint, I didn't go to the gym or really watch what I was eating that well because I didn't have to, you know. But now, especially in the last couple years, I have a personal trainer I work out with every day. I can eat whatever I want, but I try and, eat a lot of high protein to stay strong. And I feel like that's helped me a lot, especially in, I think about, like, in close races, you know, when I'm coming down a lane, I want the advantage to, you know, try and outpower another guy. If we're, you know, if we're both on the same horse, I want to try and have that edge, you know. And I never did really think of it like that when I first started riding. And just and really just the more races you ride, it becomes a little bit easier, not making as many mistakes, or, you know, you see other things that you didn't before as far as, like, holes opening up or you know, what to do in split second situations. So really just riding the line, and as the years go on, I think that just comes to you a little better.
Who's the toughest jockey to get by in the stretch if you're locked in a head-to-head duel?
I'm gonna tell you what, when Garrett Gomez was riding at his peak, and you know, a few years ago, he was so strong and tough. I can remember he would when I would get to him, I would try and blow by him, because he was so strong and powerful, just pick horses off. But really a lot of guys out here are strong. You know, a lot of guys out here work out, and you know, they take that pretty well to try and finish strong. So there's a lot of them like that. There's a lot of them like that. But you know what? It's good, because it keeps us all competitive. You know, it makes me work a little harder, and I like that. You know, it keeps you wanting it and working hard and makes you a better rider, I think.
Well, Joe, you definitely work hard at it, and you have a very strong finish. Is it true that you worked out with a boxing coach?
Yeah, he's a MMA fighter, actually, Daniel Hernandez, and I think he's won like 8 or 9 fights, and it's pretty fun to watch. I mean, very powerful. He's about 5'6", 220, so he's built like a bull. But it's and I've been doing that for the past year and a half, 2 years, and it's like I said, it's helped me tremendously strength wise. For the different exercises we do. Like last week, he had me run up. There's a street not too far away from my house that's pretty steep, and he'll have me run up and down it 5-6 times with 5 pounds in each hand. So you do that a few times, pushing a horse is pretty easy, you know.
Don't mess with Joe.
Yeah, don't mess with Joe. Smoking Joe Talamo here on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Joe, going to go ahead and wrap things up here. Really do appreciate the time. And I just want to tell you, as you're talking here, we're hearing your story over the course of this past hour, I'm thinking back to that first time I met you in 2007 at the fairgrounds. And you sat down, you did the interview with me on our Saturday morning Equine Forum show, and it was one of the first media interviews you had really sat down to do. And I've so enjoyed following your career over the past 8 years and seeing how you've continued to progress as a rider and as a person, and you've always stayed grounded through the entire process. You're a great fan of the sport, a great ambassador, and I want to wish you all the best moving forward, my friend.
Well, I appreciate it so much. Thanks a lot for you guys, Dad.
Jockey Joe Talamo here on Jock Talk. Appreciate it, buddy.
Anytime. I hope that weather gets better.
Yeah, go play golf.
you guys have a good one.
Thank you, Joe.
Thanks, Joe. Joe Talamo, wow. What a great kid. And I can say that, right? Because I'm 44 and Joe's 25, so I can say that, right? You're his age, though.
I am.
Almost.
Oh, well, I'm a year older. But...
Yeah. Well, I guess you are now.
But no, but he doesn't seem 25 when you talk to him. When you see him in person, he conducts himself very well. Great guy. Great rider.
What's the most impressive thing you took away from that hour?
Just the fact that he's so dedicated to what he does. So dedicated.
Yeah.
It's his life.
Well, and the great ones are.
And that's true.
Right?
That's exactly
I can't
right.
remember the stories about Alex Solis, and we'll get a chance to visit with him on Jock Talk here up the road. I can remember those stories where he would go home after the races and watch replays of the races he had just ridden in, and he would jump on his Equisizer, and he would replay those races and ride them again to find out where he may have made a mistake. Here's a guy that's in the Hall of Fame. And he's still doing those kind of things.
That's how he got there.
That's how he got there. That's right. Well, it's been a lot of fun to hear Joe's story. Of course, if you missed any portion, go back to our website, horseracingradio.net. A podcast of this show and all of our Jock Talk shows are available right there for you, horseracingradio.net. Amazing hour. We're back with more next Tuesday evening, 6 to 7 Eastern time. Make sure you join us. Of course, Wednesday nights, our trainer talk show presented by Fasig Tipton. Thursday night, the BristNet.com call-in show. And on Fridays, the Express Bet Weekend Stakes Preview. Check it all out, horseracingradio.net.
We'll be back next week.
Yeah, been fun.
Do it again.
Thanks, Christina. Been a blast. For our producer, Lee Delapina, Christina McManigal, I am Mike Penna. We'll talk to you next time here on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka.